Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites almanac.com and usefultrivia.com. Question number one, where did October get its name? Is it A, from the Greek word for tan? Is it B, from Old England, where it was also known as Winmanoth? Is it C, from ancient Egypt, where it was named after the deity Osiris? Or was it D, none of the above? October, where does that name come from anyway? And question number two, which artist recorded two of their best-selling albums while behind bars? Was that A, Willie Nelson, B, Tiny Tim, C, Johnny Cash, or D, Frank Sinatra? So who was this artist recording behind bars? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October the 6th. It was on this day back in 1954 that Marian Anderson became the first black singer to be hired by New York's Metropolitan Opera Company. 1954 today. And it was 47 years ago today, 1976, that the song Disco Duck by Rick Dees and his cast of idiots received a gold record. The song became only the fourth single to be certified platinum in December of 1976. Disco Duck, 1976, today.
Is there one trouble so these hands of mine could hold? Who's gonna miss me when I'm gone? Who's gonna wanna follow in my footsteps, maybe? Who's gonna miss me when I'm gone?
Loretta Lynn's Who's Gonna Miss Me introduces our country music news. Tanya Tucker, on her new documentary and career longevity, I Won't Go Away, So You'll Just Have to Put Up With Me. This is published in Billboard.com by Jessica Nicholson on the 21st of October, 2022. The return of Tanya Tucker chronicles the country legend's five-decade career and making of her Grammy-winning album, While I'm Livin'. In 2019, when Brandi Carlile and Shooter Jennings began working with country music veteran Tanya Tucker on While I'm Livin', Tucker's first album of new music in nearly two decades, they aimed to create the kind of critical and commercial career resurgence that Rick Rubin's American Recording Series had for Johnny Cash's career. Carlile also heeded key advice from Rubin, who told her to bring in a camera crew to film her studio sessions with Tucker. Of course, Tucker, who once led her own reality television show, Tuckerville, had no qualms about filming the process. I love it. I think everything should be documented, Tucker tells Billboard. I thought about how much it would cost to have a cinematographer video everything from the time I get up to the time I go to sleep. I mean, you can throw away what you don't want, but at least we got it. The result of that filming, the nearly two-hour documentary, The Return of Tanya Tucker, featuring Brandi Carlile, appeared in the fall of 2022.
Who's gonna miss me? Tell me. Who's gonna miss me, Lordy? Who's gonna miss me when I'm gone?
The documentary captures Tucker singing to Loretta Lynn, who died October 4 at 90, a chorus she had written and the two artists promising to get together to do a co-write. Me and Loretta talked about it for years. We've got to write a song together. We got to write a song together, Tucker says, but we never did. Me, at my core, is a singer and an entertainer, but Loretta's real core was writing songs. Though she happened to be a really great singer, too, one of the greatest. However, Tucker did finish the song with Carlile, creating what would become Bring My Flowers Now, which would help propel the project to Grammy success. Article skips down, ends with this. Ultimately, Tanya Tucker Returns, featuring Brandi Carlile, showcases Tucker's decades-long fight for respect and creative freedom in a male-dominated industry and introduces her story and music to a new generation of fans. People ask me, how do you think you lasted so long? She says, I won't go away, so you'll just have to put up with me.
Say it's all right. Say it's all right. It's all right. Have a good time. 'Cause it's all right. Oh, it's all right.
John Batiste, It's All Right, introduces our jazz music news. John Batiste is our October 2023 music director. For our Voices issue, the prolific musician shares a selection of his favorite tracks by Beyoncé, Marvin Gaye, and more. This is written by Ariana Marsh on September 27, 2023, in Harper's Bazaar. Voices that define a generation say the things that we all want to say best, says John Batiste, or even sometimes the things that we don't know how to say. Raised in New Orleans in a family of legendary jazz and brass musicians, the singer, songwriter, pianist, and composer is known for working in a range of styles, having played with everyone from Ed Sheeran and Willie Nelson to Stevie Wonder and Prince, and co-written the Oscar-winning score for the animated movie Soul. I don't really believe in genre, explains Batiste, who studied jazz at the Juilliard School and is currently an artistic director of the National Jazz Museum in Harlem. I find collaboration to be an incredible gift because it allows me to discover and learn something new. In August, Batiste released his seventh full-length studio effort, World Music Radio, a concept album with an interstellar DJ named Billy Bob Bobob, with eclectic contributions like Lana Del Rey and Kenny G. I'm very inspired by cinema, but not in a direct way, says Batiste. I've almost thought of my albums as movies and cast the featured musicians like you would actors.
Give yourself a chance. 'Cause you've got soul.
'Cause you've got soul. 'Cause
you've got soul. And everybody knows that it's all right.
and in music research and technology. World's greatest whistler? A California competition aims to crown champ this weekend. This is written by Celine Martin in USA Today on the 22nd of September, 2023. Some will strum guitars, some will perform with dancers, and others may even go the old school route, performing with just a microphone and their lips pursed together. Contestants from all over the world are putting their whistling skills to the test this weekend at the Barnsdall Gallery Theater in Hollywood, hoping to be crowned the winner of the Masters of Musical Whistling International Competition and Festival. This year's competition kicks off Friday and is made up of over 60 whistlers from 11 countries. The competition is made up of 5 divisions, with the highest being the World Champion Whistler Division. Winners won't get a cash prize, but they will get a trophy or award, organizers said on the contest website. Performances must be between 2 and 5 minutes and can include classical music or popular music such as country, blues, pop, jazz, and international music. The competition was created by nonprofit Creative Being Incorporated and is a celebration of the art of whistling and self-expression. The Masters of Musical Whistling International Competition says it's the only whistling competition to name a world champion based on live band performances. Well, how did whistling gain popularity? The contest was started to celebrate the art of musical whistling, which some historians call the first musical instrument available to people, organizers said. Not only used as a musical device, whistling has long served rural communities throughout the globe as a long-distance communicative device, organizers said on the contest website. And whistling is more complex than people think. There are multiple types of whistling, including puckering, palatial whistling, throat whistling, hand whistling, and even finger whistling. Guinness World Records. Between the 1920s and 50s, many artists would tour and perform with large bands. However, when the portable radio was invented, whistling lost some of its popularity, organizers said. That's where the International Whistlers Convention comes in. The event was first held in 1973 in Lewisburg, North Carolina, about 35 miles northeast of Raleigh. For over 40 years, whistlers from countries such as Japan and the Netherlands showed up to celebrate the art. How are contestants judged? Well, judging is serious business. Whistlers will be judged based on factors such as rhythmic and note accuracy, breath support, expressiveness, emotional import, stage presence, appearance, and more. Questions judges may ask themselves during the contest include, do you feel a connection to the performer? And do the energy and musicianship reach out and grab you? They will also give bonus points to their top choice winners. Whether you are a lover of musical whistling or you simply appreciate great music, there is something for everyone at the Masters of Musical Whistling, organizers boasted on their website.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. I want to fly like an eagle.
Steve Miller's Fly Like an Eagle introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article titled Steve Miller Rocks On. This is written by Jim Farber on the 17th of September, 2023 in Parade magazine. 5 decades ago, in the summer of 73, a nervous Steve Miller entered the studio to record an album he thought might very well bring his career to a close. By that point, he had released 7 albums that only attracted a cult audience. I definitely felt this record was my last shot, Miller said recently before a show on his current sold-out tour. I was at the end of my contract, and I wasn't hearing anything from the label. If this didn't work, I thought I might be teaching high school English the next year. Instead, he wound up giving the world a master class in how to make a smash hit. The first song he recorded, The Joker, was the 70s equivalent of a viral sensation, taking off at radio stations around the country, eventually soaring to number one. That turned out to be just the beginning. Over the next decade, Miller and the Steve Miller Band racked up a string of ingeniously upbeat singles like Fly Like an Eagle, Jet Airliner, Take the Money and Run, Rockin' Me, and Abracadabra. To mark the start of his dramatic turnaround 50 years ago, Miller has just released J50, The Evolution of the Joker, a special collection that marries the album's original tracks to 27 previously unreleased recordings from the same sessions. The secret to his late-breaking success had to do with having nothing to lose and finally gaining control over the recording process. From the Joker, he said, I called all the shots. Another key element was eagerness to learn how to hone hits. I had always enjoyed the art of making singles, but the more I did it, the more I learned, he said. I felt that you need at least 5 hooks, and the first 10 notes have to make people go, what's that? It's quite a puzzle to put all that together. With a boyish enthusiasm that belies his 79 years, Miller told Parade the stories behind the key songs that have made him one of America's biggest hitmakers. Fly Like an Eagle, 1976. One of Miller's biggest hits was also the first to feature a new instrument, the ARP synthesizer, which he used to create a spacey sound that undulates throughout the song. I was a huge electronic music fan going back to Stockhausen in the early 60s, Miller said. The catchy riff in Eagle had actually appeared in another Miller song, My Dark Hour, 7 years earlier. That track featured none other than Paul McCartney on drums, bass, and backing vocal, though few knew it. The improbable Miller-Beatles connection came about because his producer, Glyn Johns, was the audio engineer on Let It Be. It was like we'd been playing together forever, Miller said. Anything Paul played was just right. Miller felt disappointed, though, when the Beatle only allowed himself to be credited on the song as Paul Raymond. Regardless, Miller thought this was going to be the biggest single of my life. Instead, it was like it was dropped down the mail chute of the Empire State Building straight into hell. To compensate, Miller said, the riff he repurposed for Fly Like an Eagle was so much better. It was so good, in fact, that the song went platinum and inspired a cover by Seal in 1996. The other songs covered in this article include The Joker, Take the Money and Run, Jet Airliner, Rockin' Me, Abracadabra, and Living in the USA.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Guess I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
James Taylor's Carolina in My Mind introduces our local music news. It's titled Tar Heel Tunes. This is published in Our State magazine, March 2023 issue. Each month, our state senior editor and resident soundtrack maker, Mark Kemp, a former music editor of Rolling Stone, creates a one-of-a-kind Spotify playlist featuring North Carolina songs and musicians. From bluegrass and beach music to the 10 songs every North Carolinian should know, you're sure to find a soundtrack you'll love. So go to ourstate.com/playlist for more information and music from North Carolina.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. The dark and silent late last night, I think I might have heard the highway call. Geese in flight, dogs bite.
So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, where did October get its name? Is it A, from the Greek word for 10? Is it B, from Old England, where it was also known as Winmanath, meaning wine month? Or was it C, from ancient Egypt, where it was named after the deity Osiris? Or was it D, none of those? Correct answer? Answer D, none of the above. It actually comes from the Latin word for the number 8, even though it's currently the 10th month of the calendar year. As noted in an article titled Origins and Meanings of the 12 Months in an 8/17/23 article in Almanac.com by Catherine Buckman, today we follow the Gregorian calendar, but it's based on the ancient Roman calendar, believed to be invented by Romulus, who served as the first king of Rome around 753 BC. The Roman calendar, a complicated lunar calendar, had 12 months like our current calendar, but only 10 of the months had formal names. When Julius Caesar became Pontifex Maximus, he reformed the Roman calendar so that the 12 months were based on Earth's revolution around the sun. So it was a solar calendar as we have today. January and February were moved to the front of the year, and leap years were introduced to keep the calendar years lined up with the solar year. Quite a bit later, in 1582, Pope Gregory XIII introduced many reforms to the Julian calendar, as mainly the Julian calendar had overestimated the time it took the Earth to orbit the sun. So the Gregorian calendar shortened the calendar year from 365.25 days to 365.2425 days. This meant that the calendar could be more easily corrected by leap years, and that the dates of the equinoxes and solstices, and thus the date of Easter, once again lined up with their observed dates. In the ancient Roman calendar, October was the name of the eighth month of the year. Its name comes from octo, the Latin word for eight. When the Romans converted to a 12-month calendar, they tried to rename this month after various Roman emperors, but October's name stuck. In Old England, the month was called Winmanath, which means wine month, for this is the time of the year when wine was made. The English also called it Winterfellet, or winter full moon. They considered this full moon to be the start of winter. In winter lore, we note, if October brings heavy frosts and winds, then will January and February be mild. So as we now enter October, let's see how this all works out. And the answer to our second question, which artist recorded two of their best-selling albums while behind bars, was that A, Willie Nelson, B, Tiny Tim, C, Johnny Cash, or D, Frank Sinatra? Correct answer, C, Johnny Cash. As noted in UsefulTrivia.com, Cash's most popular and best-selling albums were the five albums he recorded in prisons, namely Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison in 1968 and Johnny Cash at San Quentin in 1969. Throughout his career, he performed in prison sympathetic to the plights of inmates who ran afoul of society. Although he himself was arrested seven times on a variety of charges, he only spent a few nights in jail. So let's close out today's program with the artist who recorded in jail as we enter this month of Halloween. Johnny Cash, Ghost Riders in the Sky.
A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-oh!
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time, and happy Halloween!
They are with us, you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Yippee-yi!